and in this half hour we have a new work of fiction read by the author, Alex Pate. Minneapolis is the setting, and the title of the story is Merry Christmas to Myra.
When Campbell Fielding awoke at noon on Christmas Day, he could sense the activity outside his bedroom door, but he wasn't ready to get up. He thought about the 19 Christmases before this one, when he'd barely slept at all. On those Christmas mornings, he and his sister would have a silently struck competition to see who'd be the one to wake the other, who'd be the first to find bliss under the tree of twinkling lights. It was serious business being first, for whoever was first could inspect all of the gifts without interruption. It meant that you could actually play with the other's toys before they did. In fact, it meant being able to run back upstairs, wake the other person, and tell them what they had gotten in gleeful detail. Campbell couldn't help smiling as he remembered his sister waking him to announce he'd received a train set, but that it was already broken and needed to be taken back to the store for an exchange. Talk about a coup. But this Christmas would be dramatically different from any that had come before. There would certainly be a gift or two waiting for him, maybe more. After all, his family knew part of the reason this holiday was different from the others, but only he knew the full story. The secret he held had been percolating inside him for days, was like a fireball that jumped around his body, one moment scorching his stomach, the next torching his mind. On this Christmas Day, though, he had already slept through the quiet moments of an early sun, and his sister lived downtown in her plush high-rise apartment. His mother was probably buried in the cavity of a huge turkey, ramming fistfuls of her notorious cornbread stuffing into the bird's body, or spooning her dense and velvet-smooth version of sweet potato pie filling into perfectly flaky pie crust. Campbell could hear his father bounding around the house, up and down the stairs, in and out of the bathroom, the bedroom. He was obviously still creating just the right atmosphere for the Fielding family Christmas. But Campbell's smile didn't last. His mind had turned that quickly to the tragedy he had witnessed. He had seen something that he was pretty certain no one else had. He knew who had killed little Tamara Johnson the week before Thanksgiving, and he had yet to figure out what to do about it. Well, perhaps that wasn't completely true. Campbell had no desire and no intention, really, of coming forward to tell what he knew. The world he lived in didn't reward people who offered information to the police about mysterious murders, especially gang murders. But at the same time, he knew he couldn't stay in his neighborhood. Campbell sat up in the bed. Yes, indeed. Knowing he was leaving soon made this Christmas special. It solved two problems, actually. His father had been on his case for over a year, harping on him to get some direction in his life. And what he decided certainly did that. Being the son of Joe Fielding, a workaday insurance salesman, there was no way that Campbell could have possibly turned 18 and not had an idea of what he wanted to do with his life. But until 2 weeks ago, Campbell had been unable to devise an acceptable future for himself. He could never bring it quite into focus, never see it as clearly as he could, say, the next party he planned to attend. When it came to parties or nightclubs when he was older, or a combination of both, he could see himself dancing, dressed in appropriate, if not extraordinary, gear. He could see the prettiest woman just a foot in front of him, smiling and gyrating seductively. He could see his friend sitting at the table in the corner, watching him with envy. It had been like that his entire life. Instead of imagining himself on the honor roll or captain of the debate team, his fantasies were consumed with heroic slam dunks and mammoth home runs, even though he wasn't good at either sport. He could feel substantial dreams circulating deep in his body. He just couldn't make them rise to the surface. Since high school, he'd taken a part-time job working in a hardware store, but he still lived at home, still depended on his parents, still disappointed them, still spent most of his time hanging out with his friends and bopping his head to Eminem and Tupac. It wasn't that he wasn't smart, because he was. In fact, without even trying, he'd gotten nearly all B's in school, and his parents and counselors had tried to get him to apply to college, but he refused. The idea of being a student just didn't excite him. This, of course, signaled the beginning of a family crisis. But it was the death of 10-year-old Tamara Johnson that had forced his hand. Someone would eventually find out he'd seen what had happened, and if the news reached the wrong person, his life would almost certainly be in jeopardy. So 2 weeks ago, he'd gotten out of bed, taken his shower, dressed, and ridden the bus downtown. Once there, he strolled into the U.S. Navy recruitment office and signed up. In less than 10 days, he would be the property of the United States Navy. He turned to face the Allen Iverson poster on his bedroom wall. The Navy. His father, a Navy man himself, had planted the idea over the years. Whenever the time had come for a heart-to-heart talk, Campbell's father would find some use for a story about being in the Navy to make his point. But if you pressed him, Campbell would also confess that there was some sort of ambient energy drawing him toward the military. For the past year and a half, the airways were full of rumors and threats of global terror, discussions about combat readiness and military capabilities. He could feel the tension even in the safety of his own house. There almost certainly would be war. A few weeks earlier, he'd watched an entire program about aircraft carriers, and in some unexplainable way, he was convinced. He was fascinated by the footage of planes landing and taking off from these huge ships. If he had to be somewhere, why not there? "Have you ever been on one?" he asked his father. "Carriers? No. But I've seen them close up." Campbell watched his father sit up a little straighter in his chair, waiting for permission to commence a full-blown history of his 4-year naval career. Campbell toyed with him by remaining silent. He knew his father wanted him to go somewhere, to school or to service, to school or to service. Now it was decided. What would it mean to be a part of something as vast as the military, where he would be told what to do every minute of the day, and where the essential purpose was to fight, especially now when the world seemed ready to shudder? Campbell couldn't completely explain what he thought about war, about actually being in it. This was made embarrassingly clear when his mother, after she recovered from his surprise announcement that he'd enlisted, had challenged him. "Do you believe in this thing?" "I don't know," he quickly answered, hoping she'd let it go. "You don't know? You're willing to put your life in danger and you don't know if you believe in it or not?" "I just haven't thought about it that much. Besides, there's danger everywhere. I need something to do. What's wrong with serving?" "You tell me," she said as she sat down. "You tell me what's this war all about. September 11th, is that it?" Campbell was almost panicked with uncertainty. The truth was, he didn't know the details. He just knew that Americans were being killed, and sometimes you had to go to war to stop other people from doing that. War was war, the same every time. "Do we have to talk about that right now? I'm going to be careful. I promise I will." She smiled, patted his hand, and let him off the hook. He knew she knew the state of the world better than he did. He knew she was testing him, and he'd failed. But in the days that followed, he'd learned a lot. Now, at least, he knew what he had signed on for. And he was still ready to go. He picked out a clean sweatshirt and a pair of tightly creased khakis from the stack of neatly folded clothes in his dresser. On the dresser, just beside his watch, was a small pile of newspaper clippings. "Tamara," he said softly. He'd clipped every article, every picture. Sometimes he felt like she'd actually attached herself to him, that she was there in his room with him, inside his body. She glided on the periphery of his waking life. She never spoke, but he would feel her stare. Her eyes carried the question, "Why won't you tell?" He picked up one of her pictures. Tamara. He liked her name. Liked the way it paused in mid-stride before it was over. Tamara. The fact that he was turning the corner at just the precise moment she was killed had formed the most profound problem of his life. Tamara. According to the news reports, the week before Thanksgiving, Tamara had been innocently sitting in her house at the dining room table when a gang fight erupted across the street from her, and some straight-up fool shot at some other straight-up fool and missed. The bullet went right through the wall of her house and into her. Campbell stared at her picture, now another martyred icon of black innocence. And while he'd never really even considered joining a gang and wasn't a part of the scuffle that had caused her death, he had seen the guy who had pulled the trigger. He knew that boy, knew his name, knew where he lived. He'd even played basketball with him once or twice. He'd seen him at parties. Campbell flipped through the clippings. The police were still investigating, and his stomach hurt. He'd never cried as much as he had over the past 3 weeks. Campbell kept hearing the line reverberate in his head, "I never seen a man cry until I seen a man die." He'd gone to her funeral. He'd sat in a bus shelter across from the police station, protected by its thin glass boundaries, in below-zero weather, hoping that they'd bring in the killer or he'd find the courage to tell them what he knew. But neither had happened. He sighed. People were killing people everywhere, it seemed. Suddenly, someone was pounding on his door. He started, letting go of Tamira. She wafted gently in the crisp air of the bedroom, then came to rest on the floor. "Yeah?" he answered, bending down to pick her up. "Campbell, you're up, aren't you?" "Yes, Dad." "Your sister just got here, and your Aunt Shelby is getting out of the car right now, so I think you should come on down and be with the family." "Yes, sir, I'll be right down." He smiled when he heard himself use the word "sir." He was sure his father had found it equally amusing. He hadn't grown up using it, but now it seemed right. Besides, in 2 weeks he'd be saying "sir" a lot, and to people who definitely deserved it less than his father. In a way, Campbell was trying to prove to his father that he was mature enough to actually show respect. His father had been watching a movie on television when Campbell had interrupted him to tell him that he'd joined the Navy. He couldn't forget the look of admiration that had flashed on his father's face. Finally, he'd done something right. "You're sure now," his father had said. "This is a big move. You don't even know how big a move this is, Campbell." All Campbell could do was nod. His father had no idea of the forces moving him now, had no way of understanding how significant this was to him. To hell with the war. This was about escape, getting away. His dad muted the sound. "The Navy, huh? I didn't see this coming." And then he paused, his large frame perfectly still. "Well, it was good for me, I have to say. I learned a lot while I was in, and it settled me down, if you know what I mean." Joe winked his eye at his son, ran the wildness right out of me. Campbell smiled back, but could think of nothing to say. His father continued, "It's no picnic, you know that." "I know," Campbell said flatly. "But I can tell you that it will give you a taste of something that's very hard to find anywhere else. When you're in the military, there is at least a feeling that you get rewarded or punished for the stuff you actually do. It's not racial or political, if you know what I mean. If you want to do a particular job and if you study and work hard, you'll probably get a chance to do it." His father turned in his seat to face him. "Black Americans have been going to war as long as there's been a United States, before even. Always proving our loyalty, hoping that what we're fighting for will apply to us." He paused a moment. "You know, there's a feeling when you're on a ship that you are a man among men. There's differences, yeah, but you're all trying to do the same thing, you know? That's a rare feeling out here in the real world." "I think I understand." "Don't worry, son, you will." Thinking of that conversation reminded Campbell of a brief one he had had with a fellow recruit when he'd gone for his physical. The guy in line behind him had also asked him why he was joining. Campbell had shrugged his shoulders, already tired of trying to provide an adequate answer. But the man had frowned, piercing him with his light blue eyes. "I quit my job to do this. If we have to fight, I want to be a part of it." And with that comment, Campbell had seen him swell. Was that pride, he wondered? It must be pride. That must be what pride looked like. And that was probably what his dad had been trying to say. In the military, there was a way to be proud of your ship, your company, your Navy. Maybe that was what had hooked him. No, he knew what it really was. He was running. He needed a place to go. He looked at himself in the mirror, caught Tamira staring at him from the top of the dresser, turned away from her, and left his room. When he descended the stairway, far enough to survey the living room, His eyes were immediately drawn to the Christmas tree that blazed with lights in front of a sheer draped window. And there, in a muted red Anne Klein suit, was his sister, smiling up at him, and beside her sat her lawyer fiancé, Melvin. Across from them, in his father's Lazy Boy, was his Aunt Shelby, his mother's sister, who, for some reason, sat there in a massive faux fur hat with an equally large matching muff. Campbell said hello to everyone as he came down the steps, but couldn't help chuckling as he stared at Shelby in disbelief. "It's not cold in here, is it, Aunt Shelby?" he said, now standing in the middle of the room. "No, I'm comfortable, Campbell. Why?" He looked quickly to his sister, who stifled her smile and shifted her eyes to Melvin. Melvin, as always, like a 2x4 from the lumberyard, stiff and heavy, nodded. Campbell had no idea what that nod meant. I mean, can I take your hat and stuff? I can put it upstairs with the coats." Shelby cut her eyes to him. "Don't worry about me, son. You need to be thinking about yourself. I heard you done went and joined the army." His sister jumped in. "No, Aunt Shelby, the Navy. Campbell joined the Navy." Shelby crossed her brown ankles and repositioned herself in the chair. "That's the craziest thing I ever heard of. Why you go and do that? Don't you know that it looks like war out there? What in the world is you thinking about?" Campbell looked at his sister for help, but she was obviously content to let him fend for himself. "I just need to get away, Aunt Shelby," he said more honestly than he'd intended. "You could get away to college. Nothing's stopping you from getting away. It's where you're getting away to that's bothering me." Campbell tried to smile as he walked over to his sister. She was up with a hug. She whispered in his ear, "Don't let Shelby get to you. I understand what you're doing." "Thanks," he whispered back. Campbell released his sister and held his hand out to Melvin. "Navy man, eh?" "Yeah." Campbell almost immediately turned away from the 2x4. "Aunt Shelby, I thought military men were supposed to get respect," he said, smiling, knowing all the time that it wasn't even within Shelby's nature to joke. "I respect you. I just don't understand you, that's all. Fine young man like you, going out there taking chances with your life. I know Phoebe can't think this is a good thing." And without missing a beat, she began calling toward the kitchen. "Phoebe, Phoebe, you gonna let your baby go off the war like this?" Phoebe Fielding appeared out of the kitchen. "How do you propose I stop him? He's old enough to make his own decisions. I trust him to do what's right." Joe pulled up beside her. Joe had a copy of the paper in his hands. "I think it's better than nothing. At least he's not one of those thugs out there fighting each other, killing innocent people." Campbell's body trembled when his father said that. The fireball flared, its searing heat bringing light drops of perspiration to his face. Tamara smiled at him from the pages. He knew she was in the room with them. Her family was somewhere mourning her. And here he was in a completely different world, caught in the same sadness. How had she become so much a part of his life? And why was she smiling at him like that? To steady his trembling self, he turned back toward the Christmas tree. But in the process, he caught Shelby staring at him. "Come here, Campbell. Give your aunt some sugar. I remember when you was this big." Her hand came to about the height of Tamara. "You used to love your Aunt Shelby." Campbell moved toward her. "I still do, Aunt Shelby." He placed his lips to her soft and dense cheeks. "I still do." As he gently kissed her, a wave of sadness passed over him. And now she whispered into his ear, "Is your mother right, sugar?" "What do you mean?" Campbell heard himself saying. "Can she trust you to do what's right?" The fireball in his body expanded and began moving. Did his aunt know? He felt her arms locking around him, holding him down. Suddenly, he was back on Tamara Street. He could see a group of young men running through an alley. He knew something was about to happen. Danger permeated the air. And then he saw a gun, saw the fire erupt from its barrel, heard the resounding report that echoed in the street, stood there paralyzed as everyone scattered, tried to breathe, tried to make his body feel normal again. But he knew now that would never happen. Tamara had died at that moment, and his life could never be normal again. And there was some way that Shelby knew that, some way the gathering of his family like this beckoned him. He had to do something. That's all you can do, son, Shelby continued in his ear. No matter where you go or what you do, no matter what day it is, you have to do what's right. Remember that. And with that, she let him go. He almost fell to the floor, but caught himself in time and shakily righted himself. All the time, their eyes were locked together. Are you all right, brother dear? It's Christmas, and you're about to go away, and we plan to send you off with a stomach full of your mother's turkey and sweet potato pie. Smile, she paused. Unless you changed your mind or something. Campbell took in a deep breath. Yes, it was Christmas, and this was his family. And so was Tamara. She was a part of him and them now. There was nowhere he could escape to. Not the Navy, not college, nothing could extinguish the roaring fire of truth except its telling. He knew that now. He would never be able to stretch out and receive the blessings that his family would bestow on him this Christmas Day. He would never be himself if he couldn't step forward now. Thank you, Aunt Shelby, he said, not realizing that there was no recognizable context for such a statement. He turned to face his family, everyone smiling except the 2x4. And without warning, without knowing it would happen this way, he felt the tears in his eyes. I love Christmas in this house, and I'm going to miss you all when I'm gone. But right now, there's something important I have to do. And with that, Campbell went to the closet to get his coat and hat, kissed his mother, and said, "Save me some dark meat, please."
Author Alex Pate reading his story, Merry Christmas, Tamara. His latest novel is called West of Rehoboth.